This podcast covers mature, intense, morbid, and sometimes just scary stuff. Listener discretion is advised. Have you ever had something creepy happen to you or a family member you can't explain? Or maybe you've worked a morbid job and lived to tell the macabre tale? If you've got a spooky story to tell or like hearing other people's, then this is definitely the episode for you. Welcome to 30 Morbid Minutes.
This is the podcast where we cover topics of a morbid, macabre, dark, and downright grisly nature. I'm Elise Willems.
I'm Jessica Vasami. And today we are listening to some of the outrageously morbid tales and creepy events that you all have experienced in real life. And thank you to everybody who has left us voicemails, the ones that are featured today. And we will feature some more in the future. We'll keep doing these because we love them.
Thank you so much. It is so fun to go through the voicemails and hear everybody's stories. And like Jess said, we have a lot more. We couldn't get to all of them today, but please know that that's not us ignoring them. We will get to them. Also, speaking directly now to Haste from Vermont, you left us a voice recording, but it didn't finish recording. So get back to us and tell us the full story again, because I want to hear it.
And today, so the first time we did this, I had actually listened to the stories before we recorded. Today, I have not listened to any of these stories.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, those are more like facts.
Yeah.
I felt like. So in this time, we're doing more like your personal stories, mm-hmm. or if maybe you're from a town where there's some kind of lore or something, we're getting into a little bit more of the gray area.
Yeah. So I'm excited to
spooky.
Yeah, listen to these right now, right here, live.
Yes.
kind of.
In the future, alive and dead. Mm-hmm. In the future, we will do more morbid facts as well. Mm-hmm. Because I love learning new stuff like that. So please continue to leave us voicemails at speakpipe.com/30morbidminutes.
Yes. And in the recording, let us know your name, where you're from, whether it's a morbid fact or a story. And in your submission text, please include your pronouns so we know how to address you.
Yes, that is something that we did not have up to this point, the pronoun inclusion, but I want to have it going forward. So hopefully we do not, you know, mess that up today. Mm-hmm. We'll do our best not to, since we don't know for sure with everybody. But yeah, please include that in future voicemails.
Oh my gosh. All right.
All right, Jess, exciting. It's like a little story time for
us. I know. And I'm just like, we just don't know. I don't know what's about to happen. So I'm ready for it. I'm ready.
Yeah. And I know it's the afternoon for you, so it's still sunny out.
Yeah, it's a little overcast today, but you know, I'm prepared knowing what's about to happen. So
okay, good, because you might get a little spooked out by some people's stories.
I know. Okay. So yeah, we first have John from South Carolina.
Hello, my name is John Nicknadovich. I am from North Augusta, South Carolina. The origin of my story is in Graniteville, South Carolina, relatively close to where I am. It's a story of the little boy. It is arguably one of the most haunted cemeteries and grave sites in the state of South Carolina at the Graniteville Cemetery. Me and my sister were out doing randonautica one day, which led us to the Graniteville Cemetery, and we had heard the story of the little boy, so we wanted to go visit him. The story of the little boy goes that in 1855, October of 1855, the little boy came into Graniteville, South Carolina on a train, but he was too sick and frail to even tell anybody his name, and he died before anybody knew who he was. So they buried him right there in that cemetery with the headstone, the little boy. I can send in pictures or attachments. I even got a tattoo in memorial to commemorate this, because me and my sister went back and found his gravesite, which is covered in toys. And the toys was a good touch, and we decided to add one of our own from a Happy Meal. And we took our pictures, said hey, and then got back in the car. And the car would not start. It would not do anything. The gauges were jumping. The lights were flashing. Like, we all know what a dead car is like. This was not a dead car. This was a haunted car. And so me and my sister both sat there awkwardly and decided to just get out of the car and call my mom, have to explain to her that our car got haunted by the little boy. So she had to come out and rescue us. and nearly at dark, which was a good 15-20 minute drive for her to where we were. So we were just walking around the cemetery, which was really cool because we saw grave sites from old Civil War generals and things. But yeah, the story of the little boy, like I said, I got it tattooed on me to always remember not to mess with him. The one and only time I ever went back there, we got haunted by him. That was my first ever haunting, and I'm sure there's more to come. But yeah, that's the story of the little boy.
Ooh. Wow. That was interesting.
Thank you for that, John.
Yes, that was great. Oh boy. I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, little boy. I know exactly what you mean by like, it's not a dead car. Everything's working. Everything's flashing.
It's haywire. It's on the fritz.
It's on the fritz. And that's really creepy. Maybe he wanted you to stay because you gave him a toy, you know, and maybe he's lonely.
He's probably like, where's the rest of that Happy Meal? I know you got a cheeseburger in there. I think that monuments like this are especially heartbreaking because just labeling the boy, it's so representative of children who have been lost or killed or, you know, whether they've died because of war or neglect or whatever. It just feels so such a memorial to not just this boy, but so many other kids.
Which is also why my first thought is, I know there's not maybe a reason for everything, but my first thought was like, the little boy is lonely. And that was really tragic what happened to him. So maybe he's like, please don't go, like, hang out with me.
Yeah.
But hey, that could be like the complete opposite. That's just my two cents, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would do the same.
Yeah. Yeah. Same.
And will someday.
Okay. Great.
Let's check out our next story.
Ooh, Christina from Illinois. All right.
Hello. My name is Christina, and I am from Central Illinois. I have a very morbid story about my third great-grandfather. So back in 1826, at 26 years old, my third great-grandfather murdered his wife. He was arrested for it. He went on trial. They found him guilty, and he was sentenced to be hanged. While the murder, you know, is morbid itself, there are some very disturbing things that come after that. So the story is that Nathaniel, my third great-grandfather, was approached by a doctor who told him that he could bring him back to life after he was hanged. The only thing was that he needed to ensure that his neck did not break. Somehow the sheriff found out about this deal, and he allowed Nathaniel's body to hang for several hours after. And so when the doctor received Nathaniel's body, he was unsuccessful in bringing him back to life, which is a shock, I know. So instead of being like, okay, that's the end of it, the doctor decided to conduct a public autopsy. Now, from articles and stuff that I found, apparently close to 3,000 people traveled from all over the state, I guess, to witness this hanging. Hangings were seen as forms of entertainment back then, but the autopsy became too graphic for the public to witness, so they moved Nathaniel's body somewhere else. So yeah, that's kind of the big chunk of it. There's no record as to what happened to Nathaniel's body, though I have seen city like minutes and things from 1826 where someone was paid to build Nathaniel a coffin. So I assume he was buried. Don't know where. There's also no record as to where Peggy, my third great grandmother, the woman that he murdered, was buried. And like 5 years later, my second great grandfather, their son, showed up in the county that I reside in and stayed there until his death. So there's not a whole lot past the murder and the hanging that was documented, but there were some ghost stories. So if you guys are interested in that, I can send links and stuff about that. I think that's pretty interesting too. And not just because it's my family. So yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Man, if I found out that information that happened in my family.
Yeah.
Wow.
So much death and tragedy, morbidity connected to you. Yeah. And how do you reconcile that, right?
Exactly. And yes, I mean, Christina, we do want the ghost stories as well.
Yeah. I mean, no family is without its skeletons and literal and figurative, you know, literal and figurative. Yep. But yes, that is a lot to swallow.
Man. And I love that, like, there's still documentation that you were able to, like, go and, like, see this stuff. It makes me want to dig back into my past a little bit more. I'm like, who's murdered somebody? Who did some weird stuff back in the day? You know?
Yeah. And how do you distance yourself from it?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Well, thanks. Yeah. Thanks for sharing, Christina.
Thank you, Christina.
That was a heavy one.
And looking forward to those ghost stories as well.
Yeah. Next up, we have a little story from Jaden from Southwest Ontario. What represent?
Hi, I'm Jaden. I'm from Southwestern Ontario, Canada. And where I'm from, there's a lot of abandoned houses out in the country. When my sister and I were teenagers, we made sort of a hobby out of driving out to these houses and exploring them. It was late at night, sometime in the fall, when the fields were harvested a little bit ago, so all that was left in them was mostly scraggly bits up to your knees. While driving around, looking for places to explore, we saw a house in the middle of the field. It was obviously abandoned with no driveway leading up to it. And that wasn't really strange to us, because we figured the house was just an old farmhouse, and it was too expensive to knock down, so the field was planted around it. We did what we always did, and we parked the car a little down the street and walked to the house together. Going in, it felt pretty normal. There was a lot of stuff left behind and all over the floor, like from the 90s probably, N64 game boxes and Pokemon cards. Kind of like kids' stuff, toys. We went into the house together, and we didn't really use our flashlights that much because we didn't want to risk being seen from the road. Even if it was in the country, people still kind of drove by, and it would be easy to spot us in the dark. So we went up the stairs in the dark and went into what we assumed were the kids' rooms, and we started using our lights to look around, and we heard shuffling downstairs. We were in two rooms next to each other, so we knew where we were, and the shuffling was downstairs. So we both kind of like went really quickly out into the hallway and met up with each other, and we waited because we thought maybe there was an animal down there, and if it was a person, they'd probably start talking. And we didn't hear anything, so we waited a little more, and then we heard a kid laugh, and we were like, oh my god, like, no, we're not staying for this. So we both just like kind of looked at each other for a second and ran down the stairs and out through the door. And we weren't as cautious to avoid all the dead plants in the field this time, so it like cut up our legs, and we tripped and like had to like force each other up and keep running to the car. And we heard the door slam behind us as we were leaving, and maybe it was because we were going so fast, or maybe it was something else. We didn't know. We didn't really want to find out, you know. We didn't want a horror movie about us, I guess. But being stupid and teenagers, one of our friends later on was like, we should totally go back. So we tried driving back when the sun was out because we were too afraid to go in the dark again. But since we'd been driving so aimlessly on like random backcountry roads, we didn't know where the house was. So we actually never found it again.
Do I believe that Southern Ontario is haunted? Yes. Yes, I do.
Really?
No. Oh. My question to this, and I don't believe that, I mean, I believe that this was a harrowing experience for all involved, but maybe there were some other kids there doing some urban exploration and kind of messing around in this. That would be my realist. I need to debunk and get to the bottom of this. There has to be an explanation.
Totally.
Theory would be maybe some other kids were there and they were messing with you.
Yeah.
The person in me who wants to believe says that absolutely this is haunted and those toys were the former possessions of the children ghosts who now linger here.
Yeah, that's 100%. I'm aligned with you. Yes. This stuff has never happened to me, even though like I am a bit of a believer. I've never heard like children laughing or weird stuff like that. It's never happened to me. So I'm just so curious to have it happen to me, but I also don't want it to happen to me. So, you know, if it does happen, I want it to be with you because you're a skeptic. And I'd be like, okay, if I heard that, you heard that. You heard it? Uh-oh, now I'm in trouble.
Well, and I'd be like, Jessica, we are grown women. We can take these little ghost kids. They come at us.
True, true.
You know?
Yeah.
We can take them.
But I think for right now, we have a couple of words from our sponsors, right?
Yes, who are very real and not ghosts, thankfully.
Underwear drawers are like the wild, wild west of wardrobes. You agree?
Oh, yes. Mine is just like a big pile of underwear.
Same here.
It's not sorted. It's not folded. There's nothing going on in there. It's a pile.
Yeah, it is. And you got like pairs from like 3 birthdays, 2 Christmases ago, 5 different brands. No specific fits. It's just chaos.
Yeah, you don't know what to expect every morning when you open that drawer. But now that I have felt the buttery soft comfort of MeUndies, Jess, the other pairs have got to go. Because those are the only pairs that I'm wearing. Like, I need to broaden my collection of MeUndies.
No, and those are the ones that I actually straight up reach for. Like, if they're in there, those are the ones I always go to. And I'm like, I might as well just get a bunch of MeUndies then.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, who am I kidding? I'm kidding only myself. Yeah. Because they have styles for everyone.
Yep. They have
black classics.
Yes. And I usually go for the classics, actually. Just because, you know, sometimes I'll add in, you know, a couple of fun prints. But they also have versatile loungewear. So, you know, just comfy joggers, hoodies, onesies, much more.
And those come in the fun prints, too. Mm-hmm. And then they have the Move Me activewear collection. So super, super soft activewear.
Unmatched comfort. MeUndies signature fabric is so soft, warm, hugs every
inch of your being and your
every
body.
Every inch, 100%. And they're also responsibly sourced. So, like, that's super, super important. They work with partners that care for their workers.
Yes. And if you're not happy with your first pair of MeUndies, it is on MeUndies.
Yeah.
They got a problem-free philosophy.
I love that. I love it.
I love it, too.
So you're going to get 20% off your first order plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/30MM.
That's MeUndies.com/30MM for 20% off plus free shipping. MeUndies, comfort from the outside in. 30 Morbid Minutes is sponsored by BetterHelp. Jess, we talk a lot about our mental health.
Yeah, together, we sure do.
Separately.
Yeah, because it's a problem right now for me.
Same. It never ends. But what I do like is that we are both making strides independently, so that way our relationship can be a very, very good working, you know, a working and a friendship.
Oh, yeah. And I think a common misconception with, especially even friendships, is that they have to be like easy and like you can't be mad at each other. But that's not how that works. Sometimes you have to kind of get into some conflict in order to grow.
Yes. And therapy has helped me like try to confront that conflict head on in a productive way.
Oh, yeah. 100%. You know? Yeah. I've been going to therapy for almost 4 years now. And I sometimes go in with just like, oh, this is what's happening this week and I need help with it now. And then if there's nothing really going on, then we tap back into my past about my childhood.
If you're thinking about giving therapy a try, why not try BetterHelp?
Yes, it is entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime.
Yes, so become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not.
Visit BetterHelp.com/30MM today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/30MM.
Now back to the show. Our next story comes to us all the way from Finland.
Ooh.
From Mary. Let's get to it.
Okay.
Hey, girls. I hope you're doing all right. This is Mary, all the way from Finland. And I love the podcast, and I wanted to share you a little story about my father, who firmly believes in the presence of the spirits of the dead among us. Not in like a ghost form, but sometimes something of them is left behind. So he told me that several years ago, every morning on his drive to his then place of work, he would drive past a cemetery. He didn't think much of it until one morning, just as he had passed by the cemetery, he could suddenly feel the presence of someone in the car, as if someone had hitched along for the ride and was sitting behind him. It didn't make him upset, but he felt, of course, uncomfortable, as he cannot, like, communicate with the spirits of any or anything. He can just feel their presence. And somewhere along the ride, before he got to work, the spirit just disappeared. He told me that this went on for several weeks. The spirit did not join him every morning, but every so often, and until he had had just enough of it. It made him feel emotionally and physically so uncomfortable that he just wanted it to stop. So one morning, once again, he drives past the cemetery, and once again, the spirit hops in for a ride, and my father looked into the rearview mirror as if to look at someone sitting behind him and said, "Hey, I don't know who you are, I don't know where you're going, but I'm sorry, I cannot take you there. This needs to stop. You need to leave me alone. I'm sorry." He drove on, the spirit disappeared, and the next morning he drives eagerly, or not eagerly, but more so anxiously past the cemetery. The spirit, it has disappeared. He never saw it again. And so I myself, I don't believe in anything supernatural or paranormal, but this story, it's creepy as hell.
Can I just say, Jessica?
Yeah.
I love when they're dealing with ghosts or the supernatural, they turn into Liam Neeson from Taken.
Yes.
And they just cut the bullshit and they're like, "Look, ghost.
Yes.
If you do not stop, I will find you and I will kill you. Well, I cannot kill you because you are already dead. But I will exorcise you." People just get straight up with ghosts.
Yeah.
And they just say, "Look, I just need you to stop."
Yeah. That story gave me chills. And the fact that, like, you just have to be so direct and blunt, which is kind of what we need to do with our everyday relationships in life, with boundaries.
I was just thinking
about boundaries on these ghosts. Hi, you are no longer welcome here. You drain me. Okay, thank you.
Yes. Yes, maybe I should practice establishing boundaries with ghosts, and I would find that a lot more easier than with real people.
There you go. Hey, if it works, it works. But that was a great story. Thank you, Mary.
I love Mary's accent, too.
Same. 100% same.
Like, I would listen to an audiobook read by Mary.
Yes.
Love it.
Yes.
Our next story comes from John C., longtime listener.
Love it.
Real life friend.
Real life friend.
So let's kick it.
Hey, Elise. Hey, Jessica. This is John from Los Angeles. Elise, sorry if you've already heard this one from your husband, who I know is a big wrestling fan, but thought that this story was one that's worth sharing since not everybody has heard it. And I experienced it in a very unique way in June of 2007. At the time, I was working for World Wrestling Entertainment, and on June 11th, we blew up, and I say that with air quotes, Vince McMahon. The story would continue across all WWE programming for the coming weeks, including the Night of Champions pay-per-view 2 weeks later, where Chris Benoit was originally supposed to face CM Punk for the ECW Championship. Chris never arrived to the arena that night, and his whereabouts were unknown at the time to all of us. The next day, the scheduled Monday Night Raw was going to continue that Vince McMahon storyline demise. So there were lots of props around backstage, similar to what you would see at a funeral home. Matt Hardy has mentioned in interviews about a casket and lots of flowers. Chris Jericho mentioned in his book how Evil Dead star Bruce Campbell was there, too, to make some sort of appearance. That afternoon, as production was moving along, I had missed a call from my mother, which was weird because she never called me on show days. So I called her back and I got a gut punch to find out that my grandfather, who had been dealing with severe dementia, had suffered a heart attack. He had made it through, but obviously the family back home was shaken up. I was shaken up. And I don't remember exactly how the conversation with her ended. Because almost the moment that I hung up, the walkie-talkies that we used to communicate backstage went off, asking for our staff and the superstars to come to the arena. And it was there that we were told that a wellness check had taken place at their home, and Chris, his wife Nancy, and his son Daniel had been found dead. Looking back, you know, I can now see a few people may had been told a few minutes prior, but I was still reeling from the news that I had heard that I didn't pick up on any of the cues at the time. And it was totally surreal being amongst the first people to hear this news, see the reaction of all the wrestlers who had, you know, I had known Chris for not even a year at that point, but some people had known him for decades. At the time, we didn't know it was a double murder suicide, just that they had been found. The explosion storyline was nixed, and instead the episode of Raw that night was dedicated to Chris's career with highlights of some of his most famous matches. During all this, word had made it through to a few important people in the company about the family emergency that I was going through. And as the broadcast wrapped up, the company flew me back to be with my family. So on the next morning, I woke up and was able to go be with my family and my recovering grandfather, but also was awoken to the news that my former coworker had killed his wife, child, and himself. And for most of us, those who knew him and for those who didn't, it changed how we would always remember him in the world of wrestling. Like I said, it's a weird and unique version of the story that a lot of people involved in or fans of wrestling have, and just wanted to share it with you guys.
That's nuts.
Yeah. So there's a lot to this one.
Yeah.
Because, well, first of all, we've mentioned Chris Benoit on our podcast before in our CTE episode.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because he had essentially the brain of like an 80-year-old man.
Yep.
Due to a history of concussions and impact injuries.
Yeah.
I, since the inception of this podcast, have wanted to do an episode about the untimely deaths of professional wrestlers.
Yeah.
Because it is a sport that is so rife with early death. Whether it's from drug use or injury or accidents, like it just has a, you can look at posters of these, you know, ensembles from the 90s, and there's like one person left alive in a 20 person roster. It's mind boggling. And I was a big wrestling fan in the 90s, and I was a fan of Chris Benoit when he was in the Four Horsemen, the different iterations of, and I remember when this happened and there was all of that confusion and there was that early time where it just seemed like it was a horrible tragedy that he died. And I remember when it was like, oh, we're paying tribute to his legacy, because that information wasn't all out there or available. Mm-hmm. But you can like watch the tribute and you can almost see like the disparity of people who kind of like knew or had an inkling versus like, it's like really strange. And then when more information came out, it was like a weird 180 of how do we handle this legacy and how do we handle this person?
Even though they murdered people. Yeah.
Yes. And then he had like a reputation in a different way with different people from just how he was to them and his attitude. And aside from the horrific acts that he committed against his family.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a loaded and very weird and dark and compelling story in professional wrestling, which is already an industry that is so marred by so much controversy and so much darkness. Like if you watch The Dark Side of the Ring, the series, there's like a bottomless well of shit you can pull from. And I think for John, it's even darker because like they were competing with their own personal family tragedy.
Yeah. God, I can't even imagine. And to also be there to be like, you know, they were saying, one of the first on the scene or just once they heard that information. And it's so hard. And I encourage you guys, especially listening to this story, to listen to our CTE episode because it's such a complex situation. And, you know, you can't, granted, yes, Chris Benoit was a wrestler, so he could control what he was doing with his life. But at the same time, when you get repeated punches and injuries to the head, at that point, your brain is on its own mission and doing things, you know? So it's such a hard, complex story when like, yeah, he did murder his family, but at the same time, his brain was messed up. But it's like,
does it excuse it? I don't think, I mean, I don't know that you can
no.
excuse that, but it's, yeah, it's a hard and heavy one. And I think ultimately someday when we do that Untimely Deaths of Professional Wrestlers episode, it'll come up again.
Yeah. But John, I hope, God, what a day for you. I hope you were okay that day and the days following. That's a lot to take in, buddy.
Yeah.
Jeez.
I think we probably have time for one more story right now.
Yes.
And like we said, we are going to do this again. So please keep sending us your stories and your morbid facts to speakpipe.com/30morbidminutes. But right now, let's check out another story from Austin.
Hi, my name is Austin. I am from Harriman, Tennessee, which is a little quiet town about 30 minutes outside of Knoxville. And I want to tell you about the first paranormal experience I've ever had. So when I was about 8 or 9, so early 2000s, both of my parents worked very long hours. So oftentimes I would get off the school bus and I would be home alone for a few hours until they both got home in the evenings. I want to say I was a latchkey kid, but I had family that lived around the area. So I had a great aunt that lived across the field. I had a grandmother that lived across the street. So I was monitored, I guess, but I was in the home by myself. And the only rule that my mom had outside of the typical cleaning and chores and stuff was when I got home was to give her a call at her work just to let her know that I got in safe and everything was fine. And so this day I called her, you know, she told me to get the chicken out of the freezer, whatever it was, and to just, you know, do my homework. So of course, naturally I hung up and started to watch TV. And I heard a voice of a man whisper my name, just very quietly, just Austin, like somebody was trying to get my attention. And I didn't react. I was kind of confused. Did I really hear that? Was I just making that up? Did I not hang up the phone properly? You know, what's going on? And then I heard very aggressively, just very angrily, just someone say Austin, just very loud. And so I just completely lose all like sanity, panic, run out the front door, leave it wide open, run to my great aunt's house. And I call my mom again, shaking, very afraid. And so she, you know, comes home from work, thinking somebody's broken into the house or her son's having a panic attack or something's going on. She needs to be there. She sweeps through the house and, of course, finds nothing. And just chalks it up to childhood delusion or imagination or something on TV or, you know, kind of just passes it by. But I know I heard something. It wasn't the phone. It wasn't on the TV. There was an audible voice in my ear. And I never experienced anything like that before or since. I've seen, you know, weird shapes at night, and I've seen sleep paralysis demons, but they were all in different buildings, different houses. But to have this one instance, this crystal clear, as if it was somebody beside me to say my name so clearly and so aggressively, was very, very terrifying as a child. And now I just want to know what it was. Was it a spiritual matter? Was it me just making it up? I don't believe that because it felt so real and it felt so loud at the time. But yeah, that's my fun little 8 to 9 year old horror story. Thanks.
Oh boy.
Thank you, Austin.
Thank you. It's hearing
another great accent.
Yes, yes. It's one of those things where, like, you know how sometimes you hear things in your head, but you're like, I know that that was in my head. And then there are times where, like, I hear something outside, you know that that's outside. And then sometimes you have stuff like this where it's like, you can tell the difference. And Austin, and I believe you when you say you just heard your name being called and you're like, I'm not a crazy person. I know what I heard. And that's hard when you hear those things and maybe no one else was around and maybe it was something paranormal, because to someone else, they're just like, it's probably some kid riding his bike down the road and they yelled your name. But like, makes you kind of question a couple things, you know?
Yeah. And I will say, Austin kind of touched on this very, very briefly. And the person in me who wants to always try to find an explanation in everything latched onto this one little aspect of it. But they were a kid when this happened. And I think our brains are, well, not even, I mean, there's just so much research and discourse out there about how our brains are so malleable and just, we can, our perception of memory can be very, very skewed, and what we choose to remember, how we remember it, can be manipulated. And our brains can do so many weird and wild things that we have control, whether we know it subconsciously or consciously, or we don't have control over. And I do wonder, as Austin continues to remember and remember this memory, like, could it have gotten changed in some way? Maybe he was asleep and dreaming and didn't realize. Mm-hmm. But as they've gotten older, it's morphed into like, no, I was completely awake and this happened.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, I do wonder, we can't trust our brains.
That's true. God.
So
my brain has a mind of its own. Literally a mind.
But then maybe it did happen and this house was very haunted.
Yeah. To me, I'm open to anything because at this point, everything that's been happening in the world, just there's so many unexplained things and things. It just like, I don't know anything. Mm-hmm. More than ever, I'm like, I have no idea what that could be. So,
yeah, I think it's a foolish man who thinks he knows everything.
Agreed.
You know, a wise man says, there's still more I need to know.
Yeah.
And I do think there's still more we need to know out there.
Oh, for sure. God, I won't stop until I know everything. Oh, man. Yeah. Well, if there is a being on the other side, I will
introduce yourself to her. I beg you.
I'm going to ask a million questions. I have a very long list of questions for you.
Yeah. Until then, we will keep making this podcast in search of the answers to those questions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you so much to all of you who listen every single week and share and review and support us here at 30 Morbid Minutes. We are able to make the podcast because of you.
Yes. And on top of that, thank you to our first members over at 30mm.show. You guys can support us directly. And you guys get a bunch of like original content beyond just the podcast, as well as we do some semi-regular Discord horror movie watch-alongs and just overall perks. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yeah, First is kind of like a fan club. So you go to 30mm.show. It's our version of Patreon, where if you're like, I just want to give them some bucks to support them, you can do that totally. But you can also get sketch comedy and other podcasts and original videos and all kinds of stuff, animation, if you go and become a first member.
And we have tons of cute and spooky t-shirts, hoodies, lots of adorable merch for 30 more minutes, as well as our other shows at Rooster Teeth at store.roosterteeth.com. And just click on podcasts, 30 more minutes right there.
Yeah, I love our hoodies. I wear them a lot.
I do too. I wear our shirts all the time. I have them, so I wear them, and I know I look cool in them, so.
Mm-hmm. And you do. If you like our podcast and you're looking for more like this, check out Red Web, hosted by our friends Trevor and Alfredo. They talk about internet conspiracies and sometimes like a little bit of crossover with what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you'll be into it.
Well, I hope you have a great day, Elise, and it is time for our bye-bye.
It is time. Bye-bye, Jessica.
Bye-bye, Elise.